This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm Helen Farmer. Great to have you with us on the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Is your child quiet, shy, however you define it? If it's holding them back, don't fear. Coach Mesa, incredible parenting coach on hand to talk about some of the strategies to help you reset your mind and also help them in social situations. We're also talking about sensory issues with an occupational therapist, talking travel, jet lag and flights with kids, and it was pets and vets, Dr. Leanne Cameron on hand to answer your questions, plus what could and should the future of education look like? We found out with One Dubai School. Talking parenting this afternoon, we're all, of course, different, have different personality traits, different ways of navigating the world, our behaviours, and my goodness, when those personalities start to develop in our children, we can't help but start to identify it in there. So what about shy children, quiet children? Some parents concerned about this and worried often on their behalf, but should we be? Joining us now is parenting coach extraordinaire, Mesa Fahour is with us. She's a mum of how many, Mesa?
Four.
Any shy or quiet children in your brood?
I don't. They've got their shy or quiet moments.
Yeah. Mine too. And I always really struggle a little bit with how to deal with that, because, you know, often it's a case of I want you to feel socially comfortable, but I also don't want you to be rude. Like, I want you to, you know, make eye contact and say thank you and please. But for some children, shyness can be absolutely crippling. Mm. So I wondered if you could perhaps give us, I guess, your definition of the quiet child.
Yeah. So there's a few things there. Let's just talk about the quieter child. We can think of them as the slow to warm up child. And so when we think of this child, we need to maybe have like this radical reframe in our mind that these children are so confident and really know their boundaries so much that they need some time to warm up. They're not comfortable in that situation, or maybe they just need a few more minutes, or maybe they know what they're capable of doing and then they've already made up their mind about that. So I want parents to understand a few differences. That's a slow to warm up child. No red flags there. Your child that's clinging to your leg when you enter, you know, the play group that you're going to is a child that's saying, I'm not comfortable. I need to suss things out first. You are my safety. So just let me be for a few moments. And in that moment, I encourage parents to say things like, yeah, I trust that you know when, you know, when you want to join in. Hey, how about we go over, keep holding my hand, we go over here. Because the direct metaphor I want to give to that to parents is if my husband said to me, hey, work dinner tonight, and I know nobody at this work dinner.
Oh, tell me about it. Social anxiety is real.
Right.
And listen to you, you know, you're obviously a really chatty, you know, social person. But I don't think anyone, in fact, I'd be very suspicious of anyone who's like, ooh, strangers, can't wait for that. Weird.
But on top of that, my husband says something to me like, oh, you'll be fine. It's okay. It's just like a little bit of peep. You know, these things are not going to help me. Mm-hmm. But if we get to the dinner and he's like, don't worry, darling, we're just going to sit over there and let me introduce you to this person.
One person. Yeah.
You know, these are kind of olive branches to give that person hope that they're not going to make a fool of themselves. Or maybe your little child is wondering, oh, what if I don't know how to climb that slide and I'm going to look like, you know, a silly person coming down the ladder or whatever. So that's a slow to warm up child. When we talk about shyness, we almost think that shy removes confidence. And I want to be radical in this thinking and take that out of your mind, because you, the parent, has developed an idea of what you think shyness means. And you're probably really scared or worried that your child is going to miss out. Oh, you've driven them all the way here and now they're not grateful for it and they're not doing this and they're not doing that. And so the parent isn't actually living in the present moment.
So that's interesting. So the child might not be struggling, but the parent is on their behalf.
Absolutely. So have a think to yourself first before you do anything about the child. What do you have as a meaning towards shy children? What do you think? Mm-hmm. Do you worry for them? Because chances are you're either living in the past or the future and you're not there on that Tuesday afternoon at the park where your kid's like, I don't want to join in, really quietly, of course, and just sitting by your side and your blood's boiling because I didn't come all this way for my child to sit right next to me.
Coach Mesa in the studio today as we unpack shy and quiet children and why our perceptions of that might be completely, completely off. But equally, if you are concerned and you feel like this is holding them back, please don't hesitate to get in touch. We have had a number of you messaging in talking about some of the perceived red flags. So I wondered what challenges can a quiet child face, Mesa?
It pretty much stems from the parent speaking for the child. You know, that's a really common thing where the parent can't hold or won't hold enough space for the quiet child to speak up for themselves. I know it might get awkward in front of people, or so what we want to do is we want to build a skill set up. And what we can do for our children is give them tasks like, hey, do you want to order my coffee for me? You know, do you want to practice with me? Let's do some role play at home. Let's play, you know, with our Legos or our dolls or something and practice together. Because usually quiet children, in my experience, you know, I've been around children for 2 decades. These quiet children are really okay at home. They're not so quiet. Every parent tells me that.
That's exactly the message we've had in. This is from Minnie saying, I'm worried about how shy my 3-year-old son is. He's happy, confident at home with family and grandparents, but beyond that, he really struggles with other people. He goes to nursery and the staff says he plays well, but we are looking to put him into school in September. I know he's young. There's nothing wrong with an introvert, but I worry that kids will stop making an effort if they get nothing back. I just want him to be happy.
I mean, again, I'd love to hear more of your story, but just from what you've shared, it sounds like that's his temperament. He's just the quiet, slow to warm up, cautious kid. And we all need kids like that in our friendship circles, because they're the ones that'll say to the strong-willed kids that are making like absurd ideas to go and do, that your son is going to be the one going, let's think about that for a few seconds. So my biggest advice to you is change your mindset. Go from worry to absolute acceptance of what this temperament means, which is a confidence in himself to know what he likes and what he doesn't like. And then that worry that you've already kind of projected, oh, when he goes to school, I'm worried that he's going to miss out or something like that. You've already now painted a story in your brain. And we've covered the brain before, and the brain is really good at making up stories for us to find evidence for.
It's funny, I remember when I was just talking to you off air about my cousin who's been in town. We went to her wedding in France about, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And we're quite a loud family, and my cousin very loud. And my mum had said to my brother and I, listen, you know, she's really excited to introduce you to her friends in France, and, you know, please make an effort. And, you know, and my brother said to her, you know, you telling me to be chatty is like telling Helen to be quiet. And it was like this moment of, oh, introvert, extrovert. And I just hadn't thought about my brother in that way, because sometimes he just came off as rude. He came off as being disinterested and antisocial and, oh God, you know, Mike, could you just make an effort? And that was a real moment of understanding for me. And I mean, that was 20, you know, we were 20 at that time, but it was a real lightning bolt moment and something that I'm trying so hard to do with my own children as well. So is this when we start to see that introvert, extrovert qualities, even at age 2 or 3, Mesa?
I mean, again, it's where you start to see a child's intensity. So I want you to kind of start to think about, you know, when my child is happy, on where on the scale do they show the intensity of happiness? And some kids naturally just don't go overboard and start going hoop hip hooray and, you know, jumping off the couches and, you know, really intensely happy. And same thing with when they're sad. And so you want to imagine like a scale, you know, 0 to 10, and your child sits there on like 9 different kind of temperamental topics, if you want to call them. And so these kids, you know, your brother or these quiet kids, this 3-year-old, they're on the scale of, okay, I'm really happy with who I am. This is what I want to showcase. Now, do we just sit back and go, yeah, cool, you don't want to talk, no worries? We don't. We start to accept them for who they are and then start to introduce them to a new skill set. Hey, grandma's coming over and I don't really want you to feel like you have to do anything, but how about a high five, fist pump? Hello, do you want me to stand next to you when she comes in? And parents are often so worried about doing these things. Oh, we're softening them up. Well, I'm yet to meet an adult that doesn't know how to greet their boss or their colleague. You know, these are skill sets that eventually logic and reasoning comes up in our brain. And that's a whole different cognitive skill. But when you're little, you kind of speak for what you believe. Have you met a toddler? They'll tell you if you look funny.
I certainly have. And it's interesting there because what I took from that is about boosting confidence and building those skills.
Exactly.
Mia saying, my niece has always been quiet. I used to think she should be more like the rest of us. We're a pretty loud family. Mm. What I've realised that she's extremely observant, extremely intelligent, and when she does speak, she's quite profound. She doesn't waste her energy on idle chit-chat. But I do sometimes get irritated that she doesn't get involved in conversations and have become angry in the past. She's now 16 and pretty much the same. Do you think she's going to change? Should I let her be?
I mean, who knows, really? Like, who knows what's going to happen for her brain as she gets older? But what we do know is that she is showing you a consistent way of how she handles life. And the way she handles life is she is that kid, that teen, that takes some time to absorb. What I might be doing is giving her the confidence of, I accept you for who you are. Now, if she's spent 10 hours in her bedroom and at 16, that's what they start to do, we might want to lure her out with, I don't know, hey, I've made some really nice food. Come and eat with me. Let's watch a movie together. So that's a whole different skill set in terms of what parents can do to get that quiet child out of their quietness, if you want to call it that.
I think we have kind of idealized this idea of, you know, coming out of your shell, like this is the, you know, the dream scenario, and it's not.
Okay, so here's the thing. I read this story somewhere by another psychologist, and they saw two clients back to back. The first client was a parent saying to them, you know, my three-year-old, they cling to me when they get to the park and they just take their time before they go and play. And then the next client was a client of a teenager. And this client was saying, my teen, I wish he would just think twice before he just followed the crowd. Mm-hmm. And so this psychologist was letting us all know that A, parents are never happy, but B, be careful what you wish for. These kids are following their gut instinct and not wanting to run into the situation and be the loud kid and be the kid that climbs. We've got those kids. Kids come in all sorts and temperaments. And yet parents just want to create this above average perfection kid. And as Dr. Shefali always says, average is okay. Not being the great perfect child is okay. Mm-hmm. We can't make our child have all the amazing attributes that we wish for. It's just not possible.
Let's go to the text line lastly before I let you get back to your busy day. Anonymous message here saying, I'm 38 years old, male, introvert and quiet. My son is 8 years old. He's also shy, opens with his schoolmates or friends, but takes some time to start talking to others. Will the shyness go away if we expose him to environment and push him to socialise? For example, participation in extra school kind of curriculum activities?
No.
Basically.
Is the short answer. Your son will be the quieter kid. Let's remove shy from our vocabulary. Let's remove that label. It's just so, it's got a negative connotation with it. So we want to just remove that and start to think of your son as being somebody who's going to really tell you what they want to do. So you've gone and put him in a soccer class. Ask him, do you like soccer? Because I'm just trying to understand the vibe that you're giving off. And if you're introverted yourself or slow to warm yourself, you're in the best position to really consider, and I mean being truly honest with yourself, what did you need from your parents that would have allowed you to accept and love you for who you are?
Mm-hmm. To feel like yourself,
yeah.
And be okay with it.
Yeah.
When does it tip into something that might need a bit of extra help and coaching? And you mentioned there, you know, being in your room for 10 hours a day, which, as you said, for teenagers, they need to sleep. let them sleep. But for younger ones, if they feel like it is really inhibiting making valuable friendships, which we know is a really important part of school.
Yeah. Keep your eye out for things that are like sort of obsessive thoughts, anxious thoughts. Keep your eye out for physical changes, like they might stop eating or they've got tummy aches all of a sudden. Keep your eye out for when your gut tells you that this is different. See, the examples you've given me today, Helen, or, you know, the parents have called in with, I mean, their kid has been really similar throughout. So when your child goes from, okay, slow to warm, but then suddenly not even talking anymore, then that's when you want to seek professional help.
Speaking of which, how best to get in touch with you and what's keeping you busy right now?
Yeah, so we're welcoming the lovely month of Ramadan. So this is a spiritual reset. So you can find me on social media with the handle Coach Mace EQ. I'm all about teaching parents emotional intelligence and really reframing the way we're parenting. And what's keeping me busy is my four amazing children.
And lots of other children who need some help with their parents too. If you want Mosa's details, just send me the word coach and I'll send you the links. She's got some fantastic resources on her Instagram and, of course, way to get in touch with her there. Wishing you a fantastic holy month of Ramadan.
Thank you.
And we'll speak to you very, very soon indeed. We are talking travel on the show this afternoon. It is spring break coming up in just a few days and holding our hand onto the plane is Zahira Mati joining us. She's a globetrotter. She's a travel industry insider. She's also a mum. And I think a lot of parents are a little bit concerned about, well, it's a constant question, keeping kids occupied on planes, dealing with jet lag and even where to go. So it's not too late, I don't think, to get something booked for the next couple of weeks. Where would be on your dream hit list for families?
Well, for me, we're a lastminute.com family, so it's never too late ever in my book. There's a load of destinations that are really close to us. And I always, because I'm slightly visa challenged with my South African passport, I can't be too fussy sometimes. But there's loads of options for you. Georgia, Maldives. We did Seychelles 1 year, got a car, drove around the islands, and that's phenomenal. Mm. I know we tend to jump to the Maldives quite quickly from the UAE, but I would almost say if you're thinking about it, try the Seychelles instead. I feel there's a lot more culture. There's a lot more diversity and you're not sort of restricted to one island base.
Which is where they tend to sting you on the drinks and food. Yes. They're like, we know you'd have to get a boat to leave
the
us.
The price of so those drinks.
We're going to add a zero. Thanks very much.
Exactly. So yeah, I definitely think the Seychelles and then Africa. I think more and more post-COVID, we realized how much there is in Africa and places like Kenya, Tanzania, South Africa, fantastic for children.
Have you done safari yet with the family?
Or I have.
A little bit young. Oh, really? How was it?
I have. So we thought we'd try the little guy. He's 5 on his first safari last year. So we booked 3 days. We didn't go deep, dark Kruger National Park. We did just outside Sun City, so just outside Johannesburg. And we thought, okay, let's test it out. We did the morning drive. And you know, they're quite long. They're about 2 to 3 hours. And he was fine. He loved it. He was ready to go for more. And we thought, okay, well, let's push him and try a second drive for the day because you have 2 a day. And he loved it. And he fell asleep on the way back. That's in okay. The last one. But for me, if you're calm and quiet, I'll take it.
That's a win.
Wrapped him up in blankies because it was quite cold. It was August. But he loved it.
Okay. This gives me confidence.
I would definitely say a sort of week, 10-day break is perfect for an African flight. The length of the trip, the hours, the time difference. Africa's your go.
Let's talk planes. I am, thank goodness, out of the stage where I'm packing. Oh, my goodness. Packing, you know, formula bottles
and
nappies
those days.
And the extra clothes in case there's a nappy punami.
Yeah.
And extra clothes for me in case there's vomit.
Yeah.
And thank goodness my children love a screen because on a flight they will quite happily sit for a few hours and watch a movie and then they want to chat and maybe sleep and play a game. For the really littlies, so like the under 5s, in your experience, what are some of the best things to pack and bring?
So before we talk about packing and bringing, I'd say choose the time of your flight carefully. A lot of parents ask me this question on social media or when I do these kinds of events and they're like, oh, but how do I get my child? I'm like, does your child normally sleep at that time of the day? Well, their clock's not suddenly going to change. So for us, we always took overnighters wherever we could because he slept really well, like normal. Mm-hmm. So the first thing would be choose the time of your flight carefully, plan your meals carefully. Don't panic. A lot of parents panic.
And then anxiety gets passed on.
Yeah, the kids pick that up. And then they start stressing and thinking, is there something we should be panicking about? So that's the first thing. Choose your time of your flight carefully. Choose where you're going, obviously, considering the age of your child. If you've never flown before, maybe don't fly to LA on your first trip. And then when it comes to packing, we do a very similar thing. Maybe even don't allow too much screen time in the lead up to that trip. Always download extra shows that they maybe haven't seen.
You've just added something to my to-do list.
We always do that. The day before,
charge the iPads, download stuff.
Charge the iPads, download new shows that they haven't seen. That's always a winner. Get them headsets. The Bluetooth headsets are a dream. For the young ones, again, I would always work around sleep time. I breastfed for a while. That was a dream. And just sort of keep things to keep them busy. There's those sort of toys that have little pieces inside that they really have to work to get it out. Have toys they've not seen before. The really, really young ones, again, won't sit and watch the screen very long. So find other ways to keep them busy. Squishy books.
We took a lot of stickers. And you know what I loved? And still think they're brilliant. I bought them for my nephew the other day, who's two. Those books where there's a pen that you fill with water.
Yeah.
And when you paint it, they change colours. And you can use the ice cubes on the plane as well. They were massive, massive hits with
those
my girls.
Always a hit. And then you get a lot of books or sort of games that are magnetic. Mm-hmm. So you won't have to worry about the pieces sliding off and losing them between seats. So those magnetic puzzles and those kinds of things are really great for them.
Full confession, when it comes to food, all bets are off with us. I'm like, yeah, do you know what? It's one flight. I don't care what you eat. It really
I'm 100% with you.
You were in LA recently. You're planning some trips for later in the year. It's Greece, even Fiji with the family. Tell us a little about your jet lag tips. Please help me.
So jet lag is a tricky one. Obviously, west to east is a lot worse for most people. So that's what I'm dealing with at the moment. Mm-hmm. I got a flight from LA on... What day is it now? It was Thursday night. And I thought I would beat it by just being busy. So I filled, you know, you go straight back into parenting. You don't get the, I need a half day recovery. It's straight
back
in. Yeah, like I was doing school drop off and whatever. So my thing is to try and regulate your sleep as quickly as you can. So try and push through a full day, get a full night's sleep. Depending on how you feel about taking anything to support you, there's loads of herbal support for that kind of thing. I'm a huge Panadol Night fan. Like I'll take a quarter or half of a Panadol Night and it just resets and gives me that normal night's sleep. And the more times you can do that, the easier it's going to be. If you can allow yourself a day or two after the first two or three days to have a bit of a sleep in, maybe get dad to do the drop off and let clear the morning. We can't all do that. But if you can, that does help a little bit. But what not to do is to get into a sleepful pattern.
Can we get some smarty marty travel tips, please? From, I don't know, check-in even. Have you tried Dubs Dubs yet, the at-home check-in?
So I was going to use them on my last trip, but unfortunately with American routes, because of the additional security, you can't.
For anyone that's not familiar with this, last time I flew Emirates, I booked this service and it's D-U-B-Z.
Yeah.
They come to your house. I mean, I tried to explain to my parents and their minds were completely blown. A guy will come to the house with a suitcase and in that suitcase is basically everything they need to check you in. So they weighed our luggage, they printed our boarding passes, they took our luggage away, which meant that on the day of flying, which I think was the next day, we could get there. They said an hour before.
Yeah.
I think that was not... That's too close for me.
Yeah, yeah.
We got there 2 hours before. But you're not taking your luggage. You're just carrying your carry-on.
Yeah.
It was a dream. You need to try it with the family.
No, I 100% agree. And I was so excited because it was just me traveling. I thought, this is great. I'm going to swoon into the airport an hour before. But unfortunately, because of the extra security on US routes, you have to have your luggage with you. You have to check in person and all the rest of it. We'll definitely try it on an alternate route. Other things I would say is... And I know this is a hack, but whatever airline you're flying with, sign up to their loyalty program. I know it's annoying getting the extra emails in the inbox, but it's so worth it because you're ranked when it comes to the opportunity for upgrades or anything like that.
Are you ever going to get upgraded with a child? I'm always like, don't ruin my chances, kids.
It's unlikely. Put them on dad's ticket. It's very unlikely because, you know, there was a lot of talk, I think it was maybe a year or so ago, about whether they even want to have separate flights where you don't allow certain kids under a certain age into business and first class. So it's unlikely that they'll upgrade a family, but it does work on a ranking system. So if you are part of any airline loyalty program, depending on where you are, your likelihood to be upgraded is better. Then there's also tricks about sort of waiting to the gate, flag it to let them know that you're open to being upgraded. But again, if you're not on that loyalty program, if you're not on the loyalty program, your chances are slim to none.
Pretty, a little bit invisible. Matthew's saying, my daughter's 14 and I still take a spare set of clothes. Had too many instances of delayed flights, emergency landings. Do you know what? And luggage lost.
Yeah.
I am going to definitely stick in some swimmers and a bit of extra
always,
stuff overnight.
Regardless of whether I have child in tow or not, will have a spare set of clothing and underwear. It's what we always forget. Mm-hmm. In case your luggage doesn't arrive the day you arrive, always have snacks. And then something else that I always do is you can take two tennis balls and a sock. And even if you don't have back problems, it helps with circulation on longer flights. So if you pop two tennis balls into, you can do it on your foot. You can put it behind your back against the seat. I have a rad, like a rad roller, which has two solid balls that are joined together.
They're awesome. I love those.
But you don't
those.
Need to buy that. You could literally take a sock, tie a knot with two tennis balls in it and just roll around on the back of your seat. And it gives you such, the back of your neck, it even keeps kids busy, actually.
Did you see that that series of tweets last week? And it was about a woman who was observing a fellow passenger on a plane. She was like, the woman on this flight has gone into full influencer flight mode. She's like, you know, matching cozy cords, you know, face mask and cashmere blanket. She's like, it was an hour flight. I was like,
I love watching people.
I do too. But I also think, why not make yourself as comfortable as
possible? 100%. Go for it.
Get the blanket. You know, get the face spray, whatever works for you. Message on 4001 saying, I used to take a load of toys, but my daughter would spend 7 hours playing with the seatbelt, the safety instructions and the window blind.
That's what they do.
That's exactly what they do.
I mean, you can never plan for them, right? They're the most unpredictable little creatures we have. We love them.
What else goes in on your bag in terms of your must packs, regardless of the destination? Anything that can make a hotel room feel like home, or anything that can help a child feel a bit settled quicker as well?
So we never really had issues with sleep with the little guy. So I did it for the first couple of flights, and then I kind of offloaded the whole cough syrup or whatever. With him, it was more just let him go through what he needs to go through. If he wants to be awake, if the room's safe, I could be happily asleep and let him just do his thing on the floor. If he was younger than that, then he'd be in the bed and I'd be up, particularly on our long flights. We did a lot of Americas and Australias with him. It was really just letting him be awake if he needed to be awake, be asleep if he needed to be asleep. I don't believe in fighting jet lag because it never works. You're fighting a losing battle.
Thank you to June saying travel blackout blinds for the win. Do you know what? We did this a lot in the UK, especially in the summer where it's light until about 10:30 at night. And the kids going, it's not bedtime. It's summer. Mm-mm. No. Either the travel ones or my dad was taping up bin bags. It looked pretty bad, but it worked.
But you know, you need to trick your senses, and that's what you need to do.
We've run out of time. I haven't run out of questions, and I know you've got loads more advice. For anyone who wants to follow you, what's the best way of finding you online and following your travels and, of course, all the advice as well?
Instagram's the easiest. It's Mrs. Zahmarty, Z-A-H Marty, M-A-R-T-Y. Send any questions. I get loads of questions about travel all the time, whether it's destination, hotels, whatever. Send it over. Love answering them.
Well, thank you for coming in today. Where's next on the agenda? Have you got anything booked, or is it proper lastminute.com?
Well, with the TV show, it's always last minute. We get like a week's notice to be ready and sort of on board. But I'm hoping to be home for Ramadan and probably back to LA straight after.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. If you do work with yourselves on Instagram, just drop a little message saying travel and I will send you the link. Wishing you a lovely month of Ramadan ahead and always safe travels. We're talking children and sensory issues, picky eating, resistance to certain fabrics and textures and more. How to identify and, of course, what treatment and management can look like. We've got Zoe Moosman with us. She's an occupational therapist who's sensory integration certified, more than a decade of paediatric experience, joining us now from Hope Habilitation Centre to unpack this for us, answer my questions and, of course, those coming in on the text line. Zoe, welcome to the studio and welcome to Dubai. You're new here and I'm so happy to be leveraging your expertise on a topic that actually comes up an awful lot, whether we've talked about picky eating or when we're talking about issues in schools. And I feel like this sensory umbrella term can be a bit confusing for people. So I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about some of the sensory issues you've worked with children and their families.
Sure. Hi. Thank you. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
For welcoming me. Yes, I've worked with many different sensory sensitivity issues. Some children come and they're very sensitive to noise. They find it very difficult to cope in a classroom environment. They end up coming home feeling overwhelmed and having meltdowns because they've just been bombarded with auditory sound input, or they struggle in events such as on the sports field. They might feel overwhelmed and not want to participate, or they struggle in family outings or at birthday parties. They don't want to be part of it. They rather want to be on their own, hiding away. We've also dealt with children that have texture sensitivities to texture, so they might find it difficult with dressing. They don't want to wear socks, or they become very aware and irritated by their labels on their clothing.
It's interesting. I just noticed a couple of children's clothing companies, I'm pretty sure H&M is one of them, has started not having labels and they'll just print inside.
Yes.
Which, you know, is obviously, I don't know if it's because of sensory issues or if it's an environmental thing or who knows. But a few of my friends whose children do have sensory issues have said, just a quick heads up, this is now a thing.
Interesting.
So are there any particular textures that you've seen being kind of more problematic?
Well, with children that have the tactile sensitivities, it's usually the light touch that seems to really irritate them. And you can also find, you know, there's a variety. Some it'll also affect some children's eating. They become very picky eaters. It's the same. They're adverse to certain textures of foods. Either they don't like sort of liquid foods, or they don't like crunch. So it very much depends on the particular child. There's not a set recipe that you can generalize for all children. So that's why it's very important, us as OTs, we work closely with the parents who know the child, and we do something called a sensory profile, where we actually track the sensory patterns of that particular child, so that the treatment and the therapy is particularly catered towards their particular sensitivities.
I think there's still a bit of an unknown around this for kind of my generation. Whereas I wondered if perhaps it's been diminished in the past of, you know, don't be so silly, don't be so picky, just put your t-shirt on, you know, all that kind of thing. So I wondered if you could perhaps share some of the things that a child might say if they are experiencing some sensory processing problems. What are some of the, and I don't want to say red flags, but things that parents can certainly be aware of?
Sure, and that's very true what you say, that sometimes it does look like difficult behavior. So you might see a child then whiny, or, you know, when they're overwhelmed at an event or at a party, they might want to cry, or they put their hands over their ears with sounds, or they are reluctant to try certain foods. And you just get a sense that your child is just not comfortable. They seem, you probably first see it through the behavioral lens, that they're just difficult, or they're rigid and not willing to try things. But you will get a sense as a parent that actually there's a pattern going on here, that my child is maybe, the behavior is a result of the sensitivity to.
Joining us now from Hope Habilitation Medical Centre is Zoe Moosman. She's an occupational therapist, sensory integration certified, more than a decade of paediatric experience. We're talking about sensory issues. We've touched on some picky eating, resistance to certain fabrics, noise and more. And I wondered, is it important to get a diagnosis? And tell us a little bit about what that process might look like. You were talking earlier about getting a bit of a profile together.
Yes.
Could you demystify that a little bit for anyone, for anyone who's listening? And I know a lot of people have been in touch with questions going, you know, what happens if my child gets a label, you know, and then what?
Yeah. No, I understand. Well, I feel that it only should become an issue if it is really affecting your child's function in everyday life. And we as occupational therapists, we look at participation and function. So is it affecting them in their school, in their play, in their socializing, and their ability to participate on the sports field, and their ability to participate in family outings. If you feel that it is holding your child back, then yes, I think as soon as possible, it is so important to get the help and guidance from an occupational therapist.
And how old, Zoe, would you say you were able to get a real handle on what's going on? Would you say, okay, 18 months is too young, 3 is about right, or, you know, when is there a kind of a most useful age, I guess, for displaying some of those behaviours where you can really start to treat it?
As soon as possible, really. I mean, often we get fussy babies, you know, that we get children coming in about 4 years old, and the mum will say, oh, yes, it was so difficult during the baby years. She was such a fussy baby. She was so difficult to calm. She didn't have regular sleeping routines. very colicky, crying all the time. I feel that even at that stage, one can intervene and can definitely assist mum and assist baby with regulation.
Let's go to the text line 4001 if you want to get in touch. Anonymous message saying, do sensory issues get worse when tired or stressed? I feel like my sons are harder to deal with if he's sleepy or has something upsetting going on, so they do become bigger to him.
Definitely. We so often find that, especially if at the end of the day, we call it the end of school day meltdown, which is so typical, where the child, everyone has a sensory neurological threshold, and a child that is sensitive, the more and more and more that you are bombarding that sensitive sensory threshold with sensory input, it's going to just get more and more and more sensitive, and then it'll just sort of erupt. Mm-hmm. So definitely, that's totally one of the signs, is that when tired, when stressed,
hungry,
after a school day where there's been a lot of exposure to all sorts of sensory input, yes, that's okay. When it will have its worst.
It's all good information, isn't it? And so you can start to recognise and offset some of those things that could exacerbate.
Yes.
Rachel's saying, I'm not a child, but as I'm getting older, I find myself overwhelmed by noise. If it's too loud or there's conflicting sounds at home, it can make me almost angry or tearful. I'd welcome any advice. I actually feel that. And I don't know if it's because, I mean, we're wearing headphones right now and I've got 3 hours of, you know, music and, you know, a lot going on. So I tend to try and have quite a quiet drive home before, you know, I'm confronted by the two children. But the noise thing, I think a lot of people, you mentioned then children, can you develop some of these things as you get older, as Rachel's talking about here?
Yes, definitely. I think definitely as we are expected to cope with more and more different environments and get bombarded more and more, you know, with media, with all these sounds, it definitely builds up. And I find also, I'm also becoming more and more aware that I've got the sensitivity to sounds, and that after a long day, I need to have a quiet time. I think also, you know, as you get older, you become more and more aware of this as well.
Definitely. What about Rachel? Is there anything that you tend to recommend to help calm the nervous system down a little bit? Any techniques that can be useful in children and indeed adults?
Definitely. I find, because I have quite significant noise sensitivity myself, I find if I have to go to a mall or at my particular work, I'm not used to the sound of this constant aircon, because we don't really have that back home.
That's interesting. As I said, you've been in Dubai just a week, so
yes.
You are really bombarded at the minute with new noises, environments and people, air conditioning. See, I'm just so used to it now, but isn't that interesting that your body's like, oh, this is new?
Yes. So I find what I've done is I have those silicone earplugs. Mm-hmm. And if I know I'll be going to the shopping center, I went to the Emirates Mall and it was very intense for me.
To lie down in a dark room.
Hours to recover from that.
Thank you for your honesty. I think it's really important. I honestly do. I really do. It's really valuable. So we've got people asking for your details. If you want to send me a message just saying Zoe, I'll send you the link so you can find Zoe at Hope. To the text line, anonymous message saying, our nearly 3-year-old has shown several signs of what I think is SPD, so sensory processing disorder. Yes. He doesn't like water, only recently lets me wash his hair. We will touch water and ice at nursery, but he doesn't like wet textures, so paint makes him freak out. Loud sounds is another. We attended a music class, he hid the whole time. I can't take him to party, cinema or anything that's loud. Any help or advice appreciated, because I don't know where to go or what to start or do. So it sounds like a stressed out parent.
Yes, really. Yes. And it's very difficult when you have that combination of the auditory and the tactile sensitivities. Often we end up with, it's quite distressing for the child. So you'll have those behavioral challenges as well. Mm-hmm. So I really advise for this parent, you know, it's difficult for me to give general advice.
Of course, but you think this could be something that you could potentially
definitely.
Can I ask then, what are some of the things you do in sessions with parents and children in terms of helping them deal with what they're going through? What can you kind of tell us a little bit what happens behind those closed doors at Hope?
Well, because I'm a sensory integration trained therapist, I use the sensory gym. We've got this wonderful space that has swings and it's got different sensory bins with different textiles, wet, dry, balls. And we basically find out which sensory inputs help calm and regulate that child's mm-hmm. sensory nervous system. And we provide a sensory diet that is particularly catered for that child. And a sensory diet is basically activities and things that we've noticed in the session the child responds well to. So, for example, you might notice that your child might enjoy firm hugs. And this could be an indication that they enjoy that deep tactile pressure, and that's calming for them. Mm. Or you might find that they like swinging, slow, linear, rocking, swinging, which is quite calming for quite a lot of children. And what we do is we write up what we call the sensory diet with these activities that the parent can then do as a sort of diet.
Yeah, and incorporate at home.
Incorporate at home, and it can even be given to the school. We'll do a school visit and guide the teacher on activities that the child can do that can help regulate and keep them calm and modulated and focused for school. The other thing we do is we gradually start to desensitize them. So we've got this Warbarger brush protocol that we do, which is like a brush with fine bristles. And we teach the parents how to do this daily, 3 times a day brushing. Well, it's supposed to be a lot more, but most parents can cope with 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to really help desensitize those tactile sensitivities.
It's absolutely fascinating. It really is. Thank you so, so much. We've run out of time. We have got more questions to get to, and I will connect anyone who's been in touch with Zoe. If you do want to find out more about, as I said, getting a diagnosis, exploring this and any of the issues that you're struggling with, just send me the word Zoe for make it super simple, and I will send you the link for Hope Habilitation Centre so you can indeed explore that. Thank you so much. Welcome to Dubai.
Thank you.
It is
sensory overload,
I'm afraid.
Totally.
But the month of Ramadan is coming, so hopefully a bit of quiet coming your way as well. Zoe Musman joining us here. Talking education now, and Sisson School has just put out a white paper on the future of learning. It outlines the need for all education stakeholders to collectively reimagine a more future-relevant learning experience for students. According to their research, creative thinking, mental well-being and confidence are the top skills that parents believe are important to a child's future success. 87% of parents believing digital literacy is critical for the future success of children, while resilience and entrepreneurship rank at 84%. Do you agree? Let us know. We're talking about future-proofing education and our children now with Dr. Adil Al-Daruni, the founder of Sisson School here in Dubai, delving deeper into this report. Dr. Adil, great to have you with us. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much for receiving me.
Of always.
Beautiful day.
It is. Do you know, it is a beautiful day. I do the Helen Farmer Burj view test. So from the studio, I can see the Burj Khalifa and the Burj Al Arab. It is a beautiful day in Dubai. And I thank you for your time. I know you're incredibly busy. I know you do things not just a little differently, but I think very differently at Sisson School in the best possible way. For anyone that's not familiar with the school and its philosophy, before we get into the report, are you able to give us a snapshot into that, Doctor?
Well, the thought behind the school was originally to understand where are we heading as humanity when it comes to skills and what will generations to come, our kids, face by the time they get into the job market. That was our starting point, really. And we've realized that statistically, 40% of them will have to be self-employed. And then the balance, 60% of them will fall into jobs that are not yet imagined. So an education system...
It's crazy, isn't it?
It is. These are
Because how can we possibly prepare our children for jobs that don't even exist yet? And I think it's not necessarily about those hard academic skills, although of course those are crucial, but you know, some of the things you've identified in this report, you know, digital literacy, resilience, entrepreneurship, as you're talking to there, and how our attitudes towards work and the way we work is just completely different to what it was 50 years ago, even 10 years ago. So I wondered then, how well do you think UAE schools are cultivating these skills, Dr. Adil?
We are blessed with a couple of factors, undeniably. A, we are extremely multicultural. Mm-hmm. I mean, even at the new school like Citizens, that has more than 44 nationalities already. Wow. It's quite impressive. So the good thing about that is that we get skills from all around the world. We get cultures that mix in one pot, and you get a lot of learning happening just through interaction. And the second thing we are extremely also blessed with is a very progressive government. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would claim that it is one of the very few governments that are ahead of even the private sector. So those two aspects are actually really pushing everyone to the outside of their comfort zone to try and reimagine the future. Now, as an education system, it is trying to do its best, but let's not forget that this is 200 years of schools that are producing basically skills in math, because we were growing tremendously as a population, as humanity. The reality is, you know, less than 15 years from now, that image will change. And we know that already. And to change how we skill up the next future is something that we'll have to all go through. And us here in Citizen School, it's basically the heart of what we are trying to go through. And it is not easy. I mean, to reimagine an educational experience to deliver on a close-by challenge that is extremely different than the last 200 years is something to go through, yeah.
It is. It's revolutionary to conceptualize it, for one thing, and also to get buy-in from parents, because you're saying we're not necessarily undoing, but it takes a big leap, I think, for parent to go, do you know what? Yes, we do want to do things differently. Are you able to explain a little bit about what that looks like in practice, you know, in the classroom and outside of the classroom, Doctor, there at Citizens, that we can kind of illustrate your philosophy through for everyone listening today?
So, we are lucky to have more than 70% of our parents are actually being entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So they see the problem. Mm-hmm. They see that their kids need to have a variety of skill sets that will save them the hassle they went through as parents to become entrepreneurs, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So we are being extremely lucky to have entrepreneurial parents that want things a bit more relevant to entrepreneurship, that want things to be a bit different, and that is more relevant to the future that most probably their kids will have to go through. Mm-hmm. So that is on the one side. As with how does it really reflect on day-to-day learning experience, you see that across the board, starting with teachers that are geared up to become more like mentors than teachers. So they are not vessels of knowledge trying to transfer that knowledge into kids, more so training students to research and find the knowledge they require, identify the problems and try to find solutions. So in the heart of any entrepreneurship experience or skill capability that you have to go through, research sits at the beginning of the process, and then goes after that communication, conceptualizing of ideas, and taking them all the way to something that can add value to community, society, and reflect on quality of life. So taking that down to every day, every session, the learning outcomes, how is it that the kids would acquire knowledge specifically across creativity, communication, building their identity, character, and skill set. So yeah, it's quite a meticulous exercise. And the reality is, it's quite a challenge, because we are reimagining an education experience that is more relevant towards entrepreneurship and quality of life, mm-hmm. which is probably not very common.
No, it really isn't. I mean, you are based on the British curriculum, but you have what you call a custom-built tapestry, and you've touched on a couple of those things there. Entrepreneurship, the digital literacy, mindset as well, health and well-being. A message here from Rasheen saying, what age is this school for? Good question. You are starting, and you are a new school, starting with FS. What year are you going up to, and are there plans to extend the offering, Dr. Adil?
So we go to year 6 now, and luckily we've also opened our nursery, which went ahead of time.
Congratulations.
Tell you the truth, we were blessed to have the support by the government authority, and we have opened also our nursery. So it is up to grade 6, and we are opening 7 starting September. So we'll be growing a grade every year moving forward.
Go on.
Yeah, so we've been extremely lucky with our teachers, extremely lucky with our parents and the students, and it has been quite an interesting journey. We enjoyed it.
Tell us a little bit more about this report. As we said, 87% of parents believing digital literacy is critical for future success of children. Was there anything that surprised you or stood out from those findings?
Actually, it solidified our assumptions. So we are quite research-oriented as a team, a founding team. We always like to back up our assumptions with research. We thought that some of these would be key, and they came up, most of them, as key with a couple of surprises, which is the goodness of doing things scientifically the way we do. So yes, actually, they confirm a lot of the assumptions we had, and they add a bit more, and we accordingly are acting.
And that, I guess that's the beauty, isn't it? You know, as a new school, one that is obviously very progressive, you've got that agility. You know, you can be looking at changing not necessarily a core curriculum, but certainly the way it's delivered and the foundation and your philosophy. We've had a number of people asking for for more details, basically. It is citizens.me if you want to find out a little bit more. And if anyone wants to read that report, Dr. Dill, what's the best way of finding out more about some of those findings?
It is on the website. And they can have a look at it. If they would like to visit us at the school, have the VIP tour, of course, and we'd love to take them through and also expose them to the research report. So they can access it conveniently on the website or visit us, and we'd love to receive them.
Thank you so much for your time today. Really do appreciate it. I love the idea of just doing things differently. As I said, it takes a big leap to do that as a parent, to go perhaps what feels like against what we've grown up with. But I mean, it's just absolutely undeniable. We're in uncharted waters here when it comes to our children. I think it's hugely exciting to have a school here in Dubai who are there to guide the way. So thank you for your time and opening our eyes today. Dr. Adil there speaking to us, the founder of Citizens School Dubai.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan, groundbreaking science, life-changing nutrition.
Joining us live in the studio is Dr. Leanne Cameron from the British Veterinary Hospital. She is on hand to help, and thank you. I think you'll be pretty busy this afternoon, Leanne. We've got already a number of questions from concerned and also quite curious pet owners about what weird and wonderful things their animals are up to. Speaking of weird and wonderful, this really tickled me. A survey has come out in the UK talking about how half of our pets become excited when certain musical genres are played. You and your household, what animals have you got?
So I've got Guinness, who's an 8-year-old Cocker Spaniel Cross poodle. And then I have Hendrix and Hennessy, who are 2 ginger puss cats. So, yeah, they have been exposed to a fair bit of music.
You've also got 2 young boys as well.
Yeah, I would say Cocomelon is probably the height of
their... No one likes Cocomelon. Apparently, more than a third of dogs go bow wow for rock. 30% of cats love classical tunes. And more than 40% of hamsters enjoy hip hop.
Like, I would love to know the studies that
I would love
in
to see
that.
The videos of this as well. Let us know, do your pets love watching TV, and if so, what? And what about music? Now, you know our dog Jarvis. He spent some time with you over the last week or so. He loves singing.
Aww.
If the girls sing a specific word, and I was going to get them to a video, but it's actually quite painful to listen to, he will howl along with them. And we often leave the radio on. If we're going out, we'll put a bit of Mark Lloyd on come 8 o'clock for them to listen to. But the music must have some impact on the way they regulate their emotions and, you know, hopefully calm down. But equally, it sounds like some get quite excited by some music as well.
Yeah, for sure. They've obviously done a lot of studies with music and its effects in some of the big shelters and kennels in the UK and things like that. So it has been shown that obviously what they want in those situations, in those kind of more stressful kennel situations, is they want sort of calm. They want the dogs to chill out, you know, because obviously there is quite a lot of stressful times with new animals coming in all the time, people, all the rest of it. And yeah, that it was proven that, you know, majority of time, whenever kind of classical or, you know, that kind of real kind of mundane, not too much excitement involved in it.
Kind of background.
Yeah, certain like background you would hear in a nice restaurant, something like that. The dogs, you know, lay down much more. They weren't standing up anxious. You could just see their bodies relax and some of them falling asleep as well. So, you know, and naturally and obviously in a lot of those, you know, our dogs are so in tune with us as well. Mm-hmm. So in those sort of scenarios and songs where suddenly, you know, there's an increase in tempo or there's an increase in whatever, and especially if we're boogieing along to it, you know, they want to be involved and they want to go. And obviously with Jarvis, there's obviously a particular note that the girls hit. Probably you can barely hear it yourself, but Jarvis is tickled by it.
I might give them a little call in a few minutes and see if they'll do it for me. But also hugely powerful in terms of white noise and disguising noises, if it's, you know, fireworks or traffic noise and things like that. Really, really powerful. When it comes to TV, our dogs will watch animals on TV. So for anyone that isn't familiar with the backstory of Dr. Leanne and I's animal connection, we rescued a teeny tiny kitten out of the engine of my car, and Dr. Leanne told me that she's got a thing for ginger boys. So I introduced them and he now lives with you. I've got a photo of him watching a nature documentary of a giant lion. It's this tiny little ginger cat and this huge lion.
Taking on the world.
Yeah, but there can be quite a few... You know, big, you know, if it's like a drama or, you know, there's gunfire on TV,
you can set
a doorbell. Every time there's a doorbell on TV, I'm like, would you think about the pet owners, please? They're going absolutely ballistic over here.
And the dogs bark and everything. But, you know, we use, if anybody is at home right now and you have an iPad and you have a cat, get out YouTube for cats, and it is amazing watching them. We do it with the kittens all the time in the practice, who are in with us maybe for boarding, and they love it, and it is endless entertainment as well for
YouTube
the humans.
YouTube for cats, every day is a school day. Let us know, is there any particular genre or program that your pets enjoy? I'd love to hear on 4001. Don't forget, every question and comment automatically puts you in the draw to win a 3-month supply of Pruna Pro Plan pet food. You'll also get some treats and toys and supplements, all specific to your breed. So questions, comments and photos as well. 0487155500 is the WhatsApp, or you can SMS 4001. Julian's been in touch about a Jack Russell, saying got a lovely Jack Russell, 9 years old, and occasionally at night she wakes up and dry retches as if wanting to vomit. She doesn't sick anything up and doesn't have diarrhea. The next day she appears fine. Is this anything to worry about?
I think if it's something that's, we always say in older dogs, if it's something that's suddenly changed and it's a different scenario to normal and normally sleeps during the night, then it certainly could be something significant. It's obviously good that during the day she seems fine. What often happens as dogs get older, they end up with inability to control the acid in their stomach as much. And obviously, during the night is the longest period of time usually when dogs are left without food in their tummy. So a simple thing for you to do, just to see if it makes a difference, is if you give her a little bit of food just before you go to bed, maybe at 11 o'clock, make sure you take it out of her daily calorie or you'll end up with a fat dog. But just split the evening meal a little bit, because then if there's food in the tummy, there's less likely to be gastric reflux, which we all get that kind of irritation in the back of our throat, and that can be enough to be causing the coughing. So certainly try that. If it's not something that's improving, certainly get a vet visit along.
Hope that helps, Julian.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan.
Joining us live in the studio from the British Veterinary Hospital is Dr. Leanne Cameron. Great question here from Lisa, especially as we move into the warmer months. Lisa's saying, how long should I be walking our dog for? I'm only able to take our girl out once a day, and she was going for between 45 minutes to an hour. But someone on our walk said it was too much and that we are damaging her. She's a rescue, about 6 years old. Vets think Shih Tzu or Poodle, maybe. How long each day does she need walking?
This is very variable, and obviously it's the same way as us in terms of if I now tried to go out and run a half marathon, I would die. So it's very much as long as you're not suddenly requiring your dog to do a 45 minute to an hour walk straight away, then you know it sounds like this is something that the dog is very used to, so therefore there's no indication for damage. If the dog is well, it's fit, healthy, got the musculature and is used to those walks, then there's no problems at all. I think probably what they're thinking is that obviously there is a growing puppy, so we do say to try you know, there has been studies showing that, you know, dogs that take, or people that take 5 month old Labradors, for example, out to do their half marathon training are going to end up causing problems with the growth plates and how those bones develop. So we usually say for puppies, sort of for a simple kind of equation, kind of 5 minutes per month of active exercise. So, you know, them running around crazy for 10 minutes and then lying down, but active on the lead and proper walking. But yeah, it's one of those things. If the dog is used to it and there's no, and the dog is happy, don't listen to anybody else.
And you're not having to drag them back through the door at the end of the walk. So absolutely.
Obviously, as it gets warmer, we need to cut down. And as I've often said, if your dog's tongue is, you know, so far out of its mouth, it's dragging along the pavement, then you know you need to start watching time wise and we need to watch about heat exhaustion and things like that, but again it's very much, you know, many of us have the same route that we do, so our dogs are very familiar with it, and therefore it's not, there's nothing going to be happening there of damaging them.
Thanks,
Lisa.
Hope that helps, Lisa. A message from Abby saying, any advice for fat cats? Abby says, I don't mean to body shame Emerald, but she's enormous. I need to see a picture, please send a picture. We've taken her on from friends who left Dubai. The vet seems to think she's got 1.5 kilos to lose, reducing food by 5 grams per day, but no movement on the scale for the last month. Anything else, please?
Yeah, so obviously it's so much harder for cats because of their sedentary lifestyle. It's easy for us to increase exercise in dogs. Cats, especially ones that are very difficult. A few of them will respond to things like lasers and running up and down stairs. I've got a couple of clients who put their cats on treadmills, which is quite fun. Got a couple of videos of that I can share with you at some point. But it's very much... The thing is, and I've spoken about this in the show before, that it's very easy to just say, you know, cut down on calories and increase output of exercise and you'll get a slimmer cat. In the same way as, you know, I look at a Mars bar and put on half a stone. Other people can eat 5 and don't put on any. There's definitely a genetic thing in there. Mm-hmm. And there are foods available in the veterinary market that can essentially help to switch the metabolism. And it's kind of moved away from kind of putting in fibers and fillers to make them feel fuller, because what they've realized is actually the body is still yearning a degree of calories. So there is, I would definitely look at putting on a specific weight management foods. And as I say, with that side of things, because it still might be too many calories, no matter how many grams you are, and not the right food for, you know, her particular fat. But you can, we'll get her down the catwalk soon. Don't worry.
Hope that helps.
You're listening to Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan, where the number one ingredient is always high-quality salmon, lamb, turkey and chicken.
It is all about your animals. And between now and 5, Dr. Leanne Cameron from the British Veterinary Hospital is on hand to help. We were talking earlier about what our cats and dogs love to watch and listen to. Rajesh has sent a photo of Smokey listening to soft jazz. Looks pretty chilled out to me.
Yeah, he looks like he's loving life.
Going to the text line, and a really good question here from Samira saying, puppy preparation shopping list. Next weekend, we're bringing home a 12-week-old puppy from a shelter. She's called Coco. I know you like names, Helen. I do, thank you. We have a bed, collar, lead, water and food bowls and puppy pads, but we really appreciate anything else to add to the list. What comes to mind?
So first of all, if you want to keep your shoes and your slippers, I would certainly add some toys to that list.
Distractions.
Yeah. So obviously puppies, as they should, are teething. So they're going to want to chew and nibble. So I always say to, depending on the size of the dog, obviously make sure you get size appropriate to toys. And I certainly promote things like Kongs and things that they are relatively indestructible. Mm-hmm. But certainly you want at least 3 or 4 different types so you can interchange with them. And the other thing that I would add to it is... I'm a big believer in crate training, so I would certainly consider getting a crate from the off, and basically start from the first days of, you know, feeding her in there, making all, never using it as a, you know, go to your bed when you're bad type scenario. And I often find that puppies settle in much quicker that way, and they actually house train much better too, because they don't want to urinate in their small space, etc. So add those two things to the list.
Brush. I mean, a lot of dogs go for professional grooming here, but yeah, it can be quite nice to get them used to it.
She sounds pretty prepared. The other thing is obviously just make sure, hopefully coming from a shelter, but very important reason getting any puppy is as soon as it arrives, just make sure you go to the vets to make sure all the vaccines are up to date, and basically start on the journey of making sure you're giving all the things that you should, worming, parasite treatment, vaccines up to date, right diet, everything like that from the outset.
Yeah. Send us a picture of Coco when she's in situ, Samira. All the very best. Darren's been in touch on 4001 saying, not so nice. Oh dear. Came back from a meal last night and our cat Pedro, great name, had urinated on one side of the tray and covered, but he did a poo on the other side and has made no attempts to cover it. He usually refuses to go in the tray and uses a corner in the garden. He does cover outside. He used to cover the litter. It absolutely stinks. Any tips to get him to cover again or ideas why he could be doing this? He's six. Pedro.
Yeah, cats are complex creatures, and a lot of it, unfortunately, we give cats the benefit of the doubt whenever the majority of the time they're just being naughty. Look, cats are very, very prone to stress. And even if you're on a 17th floor balcony, there is still possibility. Just see if there's a possibility suddenly there might be a neighbourhood cat that is suddenly coming up and looking at him in the window. It sounds like there's some sort of stressful scenario that's happening. Do you have a new baby in the house? If you can eliminate all those types of things, then a lot of time cats like to be clean. So if the poo is smelling, it may be that actually we have a clinical problem there. So maybe we have a overgrowth of bad bacteria in there. I would definitely take a sample along to the vets just to check. But the other thing is the walk-in litter trays are usually pretty good, because they can't really poo outside or pee outside of it. Mm-hmm. So, but I do think it sounds like there's a degree of stress. So it's trying to work through. And often these consultations that I do on behaviour with cats, you know, they're not short consults. They're 40 minutes to try and figure out.
Because cats are complex creatures.
They are indeed.
Let's see if we can help up Mansour, who's sent a picture of a gorgeous, gorgeous cat called Troy. Got a nearly 2-year-old indoor Russian blue. Troy suddenly started rubbing and biting me like a wild cat. There's no obvious injury. Eating, drinking is normal. Using the litter train, fine. But keeps having mad aggressive attacks and trying to bite me. It doesn't matter if I play with him or ignore him. He's out for blood. Troy.
Again, as I repeat, cats are complex creatures. It seems to be, maybe it's an attention-seeking thing. I think it sounds like there's a lot of pent up energy there that sort of needs to be released to a degree. So trying to stimulate them in other ways to tire him out essentially is the main thing. I don't think he's actually going for you to try and, you know, break bees. I think it's just a play scenario, and obviously naturally they jump around in claws. You know, Hendrix does that at home, but he's doing up towards trees and climbing onto trees. So we see it a lot with indoor cats as well. I'm not sure whether we've got indoor outdoor scenarios or whatever, but I think the idea is in those behaviors.
Troy looks quite indoor.
Oh, does he? Indoor,
yes.
Yeah.
He's on the arm of a sofa.
Okay.
Looking so very quite, handsome.
Yeah. So I think he's also top cat in the house as well. But as I said, the key thing is trying to stimulate them another way. So those types of cats with a lot of energy love laser pens. Get YouTube for cats on the TV, on the iPad, stimulate. And actually cats love as well searching for things like cheese, so give it a go.
A treasure hunt.
Yeah.
And what about scent? Can smells set them off to behave in strange ways or not really?
Yeah, that's the thing. Anything that changes, cats get very upset with. So, you know, in our sort of questionnaire of, you know, what's changed in the house, it goes, you know, down to the depths of, have you changed your washing powder? Are you suddenly using strong scents? Because as I say, a cat, especially if you imagine their life and how they live day to day, especially indoor cats, you know, they're very set in their ways, mm-hmm. very things. So the slightest things to us that don't seem like a big deal can cause a lot of stress, and obviously can either end up in behavioural and we get a lot of toileting issues as well, which obviously upsets everybody, you know, mm-hmm. and then it's a bit of a vicious circle. So trying to nip it in the bud at the start is the ideal.
To the text line, Dr. Leanne Cavan with us this afternoon, Helen Farmer with you for Pets and Vets. Lamar saying, hi both, I've got a large breed dog who's got front and back dew claws. The back ones seem very dangly, and while she hasn't injured them yet, I'm worried she will. I haven't had a dog who's had back dew claws before, so I'm not sure what the best approach is and want to consider all aspects. She's due to be spayed in the next few months. If I decide to remove them, could I have them done while she's under for spaying? Is that an option?
Yeah, this is something we would quite routinely do and something I recommend routinely. They're essentially the vestigial thumb of a dog, and obviously they have them in the front hands, and about 20% of dogs will have them in the hind legs. Sometimes they have a bone, so they have a degree of structure, so they're not as dangly. But obviously, again, because those nails aren't wearing down on the ground, they grow quite a lot, and then they get caught on things, and then once they get caught, the nail bleeds, and mm-hmm. it's a real problem, and it sounds like there's very minimal bone articulation there. So it's a very straightforward thing to do at this time of spaying. She'll just have a couple of little anklets around, and they generally heal the same rate as the wound does for her spaying. So we can do that, no problem.
Speaking of spaying, Dee Dee's been in touch saying, my 18-month-old mix, but whippet-like, in brackets, was spayed 3 weeks ago, made a very quick physical and apparently emotional recovery. It's like having a super naughty 6-month-old puppy, which was a phase we were very happy to leave behind. She wants to play all the time, won't let our other dog rest, constantly barking, wanting to wrestle, stealing, rummaging, chasing, all the things that had stopped. Help. Oh, Dee Dee.
Yeah, so when you suddenly remove hormones and hormones are settling down, it can cause excitement. To be honest, I'm pleased that she feels so well after her spay. It sounds like everything went swimmingly well. But I will say that a lot of hormonal things take around about 6 weeks to settle down. So hopefully, as I say, we're on the way out. But yeah, I think it's a matter, again, stimulating as much as possible.
Okay. A message here from Cal saying, can your doctor please recommend a supplement for older dogs to help with joint stiffness? Cockabee Charlie is 12 years old and seems to struggle with stiffness in back legs. Still running around and agile, but does seem stiff after an evening walk. Preferably looking for something that could be sprinkled on food, as he's really bad at taking tablets. I've got one of those.
Yeah, so there's a lot of products on the market. I think you do have to be careful, because a lot of people think things like chondroitin and stuff that people use for arthritis and joint problems. You know, you can obviously get pure chondroitin from the pharmacy and things like that, but they can't be absorbed in the same way as in dogs. So it is important to get a dog product. The veterinary licensed ones, so the ones you get in the vets, have had further research into them, to their effects and their ability to work. So again, certainly something to chat. The other thing is a lot of them do come in tablets. You can crush them down to sprinkle on food, but there's a lot of senior diets now with very good joint supplements already in them. So that sounds like that might be a good option, and it's certainly a route that I usually go down if we've had, you know, a chronic per pill giver dog. Mm-hmm. For sure.
What about other things that can help? I'm just thinking, I don't know, physiotherapy, hydrotherapy, things like that. A little massage.
Yeah, I always say, obviously, in an ideal world, we don't want to start any of those things like physio and hydrotherapy until we know exactly what's going on. The only way we can know that in terms of degree of arthritis is with x-rays mm-hmm. and examination. So by all means, a lot of the time, trying to build up the muscle with hydrotherapy, and, you know, a lot of us are very fortunate to have pools and things, and we can take the dog to the beach an awful lot, so it's easy to do those types of things. But certainly, as I say, giving joint supplements, you know, is relatively it's not overly harmful, and you can try for kind of 4 to 6 weeks. But certainly, if there is a degree, it's like anything, you're better to know the full picture from the start, and then you can start with your hydrotherapy, with your physiotherapy. Another very important thing at that age is weight, so we need to make sure that weight is optimal. Less weight the joints have to carry, the happier they'll be. We can often cure And slow down arthritis by 40% just on optimal weight. So,
Dr. Leanne, thank you so much for your time today. I hope that's helped Charlie the cockapoo. And some amazing photos coming in today. Thank you so, so much to everyone who's been in touch. Anything we couldn't get to, I will, of course, put in the text line for next week. And in the meantime, Dr. Leanne Cameron, you can be found at the British Veterinary Hospital. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.